All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. The huge crowd that's here for this lesson. Actually, you guys are going to get the best lesson of the whole bunch because I'm going to teach you probably what is the one most powerful thing you can do to improve your writing. And Grace, make sure your sister, Faith, Hope, find Grace and Faith and ask them to come here immediately. All right, so we've been talking about the seven C's of good writing, and last time we talked about writing needs to be clear, and we found a whole bunch of examples where people's writing wasn't clear, and we even had a humorous example right here because somewhere in my presentation I said, write an autobiography on a computer, and Brendan took that home and thought he was supposed to write an autobiography of a computer from the computer's perspective. And so my instructions were not clear. If I had said, using a computer, write an autobiography, then that would have been perfectly clear. So this is one of those times where, if I had given this to Brendan and said, what do you think this means? He could have come back and said, you want me? And that was very creative. I'm looking forward to reading it, by the way. So it sounds amazingly creative. Some of my kids read it and thought it was really great. We're going to combine several of these, but I want to talk just about being concise. And what do you think the word concise means? What's the word concise mean to any of you? You haven't used this vocabulary in the last week, huh? It means, generally speaking, to be concise means to be short, okay? To use as few words as possible. We call it using word economy. So we're going to spend this week on concise, next week on colorful, and then I think we're going to try to pull most of the rest of those together in 1 week except for correct. I'm going to spend a little more time on the most common grammatical mistakes. But let's talk about concise. According to the dictionary, this is Merriam-Webster. Merriam-Webster defines concise as marked by brevity of expression or statement, free from all elaboration and superfluous detail. When you don't take time to get what I call the fluff and the floweriness and the extra wording and the verbosity out of your writing, it makes you look like you're either uneducated or you're just lazy, you didn't give attention to detail. It could mean that you're inconsiderate because you could have said something in 5 words and you spent 30 doing it, which means you just wasted the reader's time. It could mean that you're going to cause... It's going to be like you had a wandering mind. Have you ever started out telling somebody a story and then you get sidetracked and a little bit later you think, where was I going with this conversation? What was I doing? You do more of that as you get older, by the way. So here's some tips to being concise. And by the way, last week's notes and things are on the internet, and this will be as too. The first thing is to eliminate intensifier words. So an intensifier word is something we put in language to try to make something sound better, but it really has no meaning at all. So I had a high school English teacher. We called her Skip a Line Hensley because when we were writing stuff on notebook paper back in the days before computers and whatnot, she always made us skip a line between every line that we wrote. So we'd write a line on her paper, skip a line, write the next line. The reason she wanted us to skip a line is because that gave her the opportunity to write all kinds of corrections and stuff in there. But she would give you an F on your paper. For those of you who didn't go to public school, F is not good. It does not mean fine. It means failed, okay? And she would give you an F on the paper if you used the word very or the word quite in a sentence in your paper. You just automatically got an F. Didn't matter if you'd written everything else perfectly. Use very or quite, you got an F. And frankly, I think you deserve that. So I would say that if you write a paper and your teacher sees very or quite, they ought to give you an F. Here's why. They don't mean anything. Now, there's very few cases where the word very can be used. The word very actually means true. And so if you're talking about the fact that this woman is really a lady, you could say she is a very lady. And that would be a correct use of the word. But most of the time, we just throw the word very in to intensify something or to add meaning to it. Actually, there is no meaning. Probably the only time to use the word quite means complete. And so you could, if you were listening to a person talk for a while and they finally stopped, you could say, are you quite finished? That would be okay. But we don't use it like that. We just stick it in the sentence, and say, well, today was very hot. Well, it doesn't really tell me anything. You could have just said today was hot. It means exactly the same thing. So, if my kids use very or quite in a paper, I'm just going to write a big F on it and make them redo it. They don't mean anything. You should get an F. There's some other words that are just about as bad, though. You should at least get 40 lashes with a wet noodle if you use words like basically or probably or definitely or actually or really. And by the way, these are how Valley girls talk. You know, I think the worst thing that has happened to the speech of homeschoolers is that they started to talk like California Valley girls of years ago, where every few words they have to say totally, you know. Every time I hear a girl say totally, I thought, well, that IQ is 20 points lower than I thought it was. You know, it just doesn't come across well, you know. Somewhat, kind of, extremely, practically. None of these words actually really add value. They don't tell me anything more. So it's a waste of space, and it's a waste of the reader's time, and it actually detracts from your meaning. So I'd encourage you to get rid of all those words. It's space-wasting fluff. Don't use these words in your writing because they don't add any value. What they do, and I'll tell you, college students like these words because a college student would get an assignment and you're told to write a 1,500-word composition. And so they go ahead and just write it out and they add all these words in thinking that they sound better. And then they get in Microsoft Word and they say, give me the word count. And it's just 1,499 words. And so they'll throw very in there to get them from 1,499 to 1,500. But they haven't added any content. And then the college professor's reading this 1,500-word essay that came out to exactly 1,500 words, by the way. And they're saying this is weak writing. And so at best, the student's going to get a C+ or B- or something like that. They're not going to get an A. Whereas if you give somebody 1,500 words where you are concise, you get rid of all these intensifier words, give real content, you'll get an A on the paper. So get rid of intensifier words. And again, you'll be able to print these notes off the Internet. Here's an example. So let's look at this first sentence here and look at the intensifier words. Because a great many of the words in this sentence are basically unnecessary, it would really be a very good idea to edit somewhat for conciseness. So look at the words here. We've got a great many. We've got basically, that's the, so we got a great many. Great and many are redundant, aren't they? Because many is a great number, so we don't need both those. We've got basically, really, very. Now, right there, I should have given that person an F, okay? Now, we can rewrite the sentence and just say, because many of the words in the sentence are unnecessary, we should edit it. They mean the exact same thing, but you notice we use four lines for the first sentence and two lines for the next one. Okay, so this is a good example of how getting rid of intensifier words causes your writing to be more succinct, more concise, easier to read, and it means that you're using fewer words to convey the same amount of meaning. Okay, so once again, let me print these notes off. If you see one of these words in your paper, What I would do is if you've got any writing that you've done in, say, the past year or so, take your paper, go through, and circle every time you use the word very or quite. If you see that, just write a big red F on top of your paper because that's what you deserve. And if you use any of these other words, basically, probably, definitely, somewhat, extremely, practically, just, you know, give yourself 40 lashes with a wet noodle for every one of those. But just bear in mind that that weakens your writing, okay, and it's going to also weaken people's impression of you. All right, here's another thing you can do. A lot of times we'll use several words to convey what one word does. And you'll see these phrases, by the way, especially in advertising, which is kind of bad. Advertisers aren't better writers. But you also, so I'll see in papers a lot of times, and I've done this before too, I'll say each and every something or other. Well, I've got software from IBM that goes through and it critiques my writing before human editors look at it. And I just wrote a 1,150-page book. And after the software got through it, the human editor still found a few hundred things wrong with my paper or book. But at any rate, don't say each and every. Just say every. It means the same thing, but it's fewer words, right? Don't say, you know, this is a full and complete account of the truth. Well, just say this is a complete account of the truth. It means the same thing, but two less words. What about, you know, all of his hopes and dreams were dashed? Okay, well, hopes and dreams are pretty much the same thing, so just say all of his hopes were dashed. Three, fewer words. Don't say, you know, he ate the whole entire pie by himself. Just say he ate the entire pie by himself, using fewer words to get the same amount of meaning. Don't say, well, first and foremost, you should pray. Just say, you know, your first priority is prayer. Okay, make it shorter. Don't say this is a true and accurate account. Those are redundant. Just say this is a true account. If you ever get one of those notes from some guy, since most of you are girls in the audience, if you ever get a note from some guy, and by the way, if he doesn't show this note to your father first, that's X number one, okay? But if he says, I will love you always and forever, you can just write back and say, hey, anybody doesn't write more concise love notes, I'm not even going to bother reading them. Thank you very much. Just say, you know, I'll love you forever, okay? Now, here's a third key to conciseness, and that is you need to identify and reduce prepositional phrases. Prepositions are words like of, from, to, away from, over, under, by, things of that. And by the way, if you don't know what prepositions are, you need to go get a grammar book and you need to study up on what prepositions are. But what I would encourage you to do is go to or something you've written and look for all the sentences that have more than one preposition. Most of the time, if you have more than one preposition in a sentence, you can rewrite the sentence to be more concise. If you have too many prepositions, it makes the sentence clunky. So let's look at an example. So here is an example here at the top. The reason for the failure of the basketball team of the University of North Carolina in the Final Four game against the team from Kansas was that on that day and at that time, some players were frequently unable to rebound the ball. I have to catch my breath after reading that sentence. First of all, it's too long. I've got this frequently. Anytime I see an adverb, we'll talk about this later. I don't like adverbs. I think adverbs are a bad part of writing, and I think you should use them very seldom. And I just use the word very, so give me a big F right then. You should seldom use those words, okay? The other thing is that, you've got the reason for the failure. Why not just said, because, okay? That's a whole lot less words than the reason for. So here's the revision. UNC's basketball team lost the Final Four game against Kansas because it could not consistently rebound the ball. Now, look up there. You've got six lines on the first sentence, three lines on the other sentence. So this demonstrates being concise. And what we did here is we just went in and found all the ofs, the team of the University of North Carolina. Why not just say UNC's basketball team? We got rid of that. We said, in the Final Four game, and on the bottom sentence, we just said they lost the Final Four game, okay? And we said the team from Kansas, we just said against Kansas, because that's another basketball team, obviously. We don't need that. We got rid of a bunch of prepositions. So anytime you see a sentence with more than one preposition, see if you can rewrite the sentence. And if you look at that bottom sentence there, there are no prepositions. No of, to, any of those sentences. So let's look at another one. Locate and delete unnecessary modifiers. So some words, and this one's harder to catch. This one comes with experience. But some words actually imply their modifier, so you don't need to say both things. For example, in this sentence, do not try to anticipate in advance those events that will completely revolutionize society. If you say anticipate, to anticipate means to expect something in advance. So saying anticipate in advance is being redundant and repetitive. So, you don't want to say things twice. So in this sentence, just say do not try to anticipate revolutionary events. So a lot of times we'll use words that basically are redundant because we said anticipate in advance and you're wasting two words on your user there. Here's another one. Replace phrases with words. So, for example, you could use because, since, or why, one of those three words, to replace phrases like the reason for, just say because. Due to, or due to the fact of, just say because, okay? Or in light of the fact that, you could say, again, you could use because. Given the fact that, or you could say since such and such happened. Considering the fact, so you can use one word instead of using these longer phrases. You can use if to replace, like in the event. So you could read a sentence that says, in the event of a hurricane, we all need to seek shelter. But you could just as easily say, if there's a hurricane, seek shelter. Fewer words, more word economy. Okay, you want to do that. Must or should. Use that instead of it is necessary or it cannot be avoided. So if somebody says, it is necessary that you make up your bed every morning. Just say, you must make up your bed every morning. It means the same thing, more to the point, more word economy. And then we need to use infinitives to replace for the purpose of. An infinitive, by the way, is a verb with the word to in front of it. So to eat is an infinitive. To sleep is an infinitive. To walk is an infinitive. And so if I want to, I can use the to plus another word to replace for the purpose of. So if I say, I bought a new sound machine for the purpose of achieving better sleep at night. You know, maybe one of those white noise machines. Instead, I could say, I bought a new sound machine in order to sleep better. Okay? It uses fewer words. Okay? So you can always replace infinitives. So here's an example. I've underlined the things that could be replaced here. In the event that going out for the purpose of eating with them cannot be avoided, it's necessary that we first go to the ATM in light of the fact that I'm out of cash. That's a lot of words. We could just say, if we must go out to eat with them, we should first go to the ATM because I'm out of cash. We reduce four lines to three. Yes?
This is at an IBM writing school from 30 years ago, but they would always say, just use the word to replace in order to.
Right. And our, we still have software that checks for that. So anytime I use the phrase in order to, the software comes up and suggests that I just use the word to instead. And it's a good thing. You're replacing three words with one. And by the way, you'll notice a lot of these things we're talking about using two or three words to maybe replace four or five words, and you think, well, that's not that big of a deal. Well, if you're doing it every sentence on paper that's four or five pages long, it's a big deal. It adds up to a whole lot of words, and it adds up to a whole lot of fluff. Now, one of the problems is when you read a paper that they haven't made the effort to be concise, you look at it, it's hard to keep your attention. Short, to-the-point sentences keep a reader's attention better than long sentences with lots of extra words that didn't need to be there. And it's also hard to follow the meaning all the way through. Here's another one. This is a good illustration of what I just said. Try to convert negatives to positives, because a lot of times if you put a lot of negatives in a sentence, it's actually hard by the time you get to the end of the sentence to figure out what they meant. So let me show you an example. If you do not have more than 5 years of experience, do not call for an interview if you've not already spoken to human resources. Now, how many negatives? Well, do not, again. If you have not, there's three negatives in that sentence. First of all, if you ever have more than one negative, you need to rewrite the sentence. Okay? But we could rewrite that sentence more easily. Just say, applicants with more than 5 years of experience can bypass human resources and call for an interview. Now, the problem with that the first sentence up there is by the time you read that, you're confused at the ending of the reading as to, now wait a minute, I've got to read it again. And haven't you done this before? You've been reading a book and you get to a sentence and it's got two or three knots in it, and you actually have to stop and reread the sentence two or three times to think, no, did I get what he's saying here? And I've had to do this a lot. I'll read instructions written by other engineers who aren't very good grammarians, and I'll read a sentence two or three times and think, now what are they saying? You know, and so make it, if by just getting rid of the knots, I made the sentence much more clear than it was. Now, here is the number one tip. If you don't remember anything I said last week, and you don't remember anything else I said today, but you remember this one thing, it will probably make you stand out against your peers when it comes to writing. So if you are going on to post-secondary education somewhere, this one tip will make your writing so much better, and I'll tell you my first experience with it, and that is to avoid the passive verse. Avoid passive verbs make you appear to be weaker and make your thoughts appear weaker than they are. Now, how do you know when you see a passive verb? Well, first of all, let's talk about the difference between active and passive. And this is something all of you need to study in grammar if you haven't. But in an active sentence, the subject of the sentence is doing the action. So if I say the man walked the dog, the man is the subject. Walking is the action. He does that. If I say the dog was walked by the man, in this case, who's doing the action? Well, the man's still doing the action. The action's being done to what? The dog. The dog there is the object of the action, but we put him first in the sentence. So if the object of the action is first in the sentence, you have a passive sentence. So in this case, the dog was walked by the man. Now, we used to have a Dalmatian that when Judy took our Dalmatian for a walk, the dog did walk Judy. So I could have genuinely said Judy was walked by the Dalmatian, and more drugged by the Dalmatian, be more like it. But that being the case, so the difference is an active sentence, you have the subject first, then the verb. In a passive sentence, you usually have the object, and then the verb, and then the subject. Here's another way. if the sentence just has a form of to be in it. So that would be is, are, was, were, being, been. I think there's another slide on that in a minute. Here's why you should avoid the passive voice. First of all, if I say the man or the dog was walked by the man, I have to wait all the way to the end of the sentence to find out who's doing the action. Now, that's a fairly simple sentence, so it may not seem like a big deal. But if you have a long sentence and it's got a passive verb in it, you have to wait all the way to the end of the sentence to find out who's doing it, by which time the reader may be confused. And if you use passive sentences a lot, which happens a great deal in technical writing, it happens a lot in scientific writing because everybody wants to just use is, are, was, were, being, been in every single sentence. And what happens is it's boring. How many of you have ever read a scientific article and by the end of it, you're I can't stay awake? You know, sometimes it's just because they're bad writers. And they could rewrite it with active verbs and it sounds a whole lot stronger and more powerful. Okay, so that's a big deal. So here is, it confuses the reader. After a while, it irritates them. And after a while, it may just put them to sleep. Now, think those of you who are going to go to college, and of course there's different ways of going to college, we've already talked about that, but even if you just took a correspondence course, and I did take one correspondence course in writing from a university whose name I won't mention because it just boils my Aggie blood every time I say it, but at any rate, I took a writing course by correspondence. These teachers in college have multiple classes. So let's say each class had 25 students in it, and they're teaching four different classes a week. That's 100 students. They're going to have them all write papers. Now they've got 100 papers to read. And if they have correspondence students, they're probably reading 5 or 6 more or 10 more papers. So they might read 120 papers in a week. If every one of those papers comes in with is, are, was, were, being, been, passive sentences all over it, the teacher's biggest problem is how to afford enough Starbucks to keep them alive to the end of the week. And if all of a sudden one paper comes out, and because they've used all active verbs, it seems forceful, it seems direct, it seems like they have an assertion to make and they're proving it, and it isn't passive, that paper is going to stand out like a sore thumb from the rest of the group, and they're going to say, wow, we got one kid out of 120 that knows how to write. That's what it's going to look like. And I'll show you some examples here in a minute. My rule of thumb is, and this is the rule I've imposed on my kids when they're writing for me to read, is you can't use the verb to be or any form of it. So I am, are, was, were, being, been. You cannot use that verb more than 1 to 2 times per page of writing. I don't even like to see it that often. So let me tell you how I first found out about this. I was attending the University of Oklahoma up in Norman. And I had a class where I had two professors teaching the class together. One was an economist. His doctorate was in the history of economics, and the other was a political scientist. And they taught the class together. It was a fascinating class because they talked about how economics and politics have gone together through years. And it was one of the most informative classes I ever had because I have a double major in sociology and religion. That was part of my sociology major. And at any rate, in the process of that class, first term paper I turned in, they gave it back to me and had at least nearly three times per line in that paper circled with a big red circle. What the professor had done, I don't know which one of them did it, but he went through my paper and he circled every form of is, are, was, were, being, been, and then he wrote a note that says, rewrite without these. That probably taught me more than anything else I learned in college about writing. Just getting rid of those forced me to rethink every sentence to make it stronger, more powerful. So let me see if I can show you some examples to help you. So, by the way, here's a little example. So you've all written an autobiography or wrote a computer's autobiography, as the case may be. And you've written something. What I'd like you to do is take what you wrote this last week, go back, and I want you to circle every form of is, are, was, were, being, been. I want you to rewrite it this week and get rid of all that. Okay? Eliminate all those ones. So am, is, are, was, were, being, been, and if they have a past tense, so for example, was written, that's passive voice. So let me give you some examples. Here's an example of maybe a first draft on a review of Elsie Dinsmore books, which most of you young ladies have written. I was introduced to the Elsie Dinsmore books 11 years ago. She was my mentor, and I wanted to be like her. Her life is an example of God's invitation in Jeremiah 6:16 to walk in the old paths wherein is the good way. Elsie is an enduring role model for the young lady who seeks to follow God. Her life is a pattern for all generations. Let me see if I can remember how to turn this laser on. Function button, I think it's this. Okay, so now, there we go. So look, there's a passive verb, was. There it again, it is, was. To be is there, is there. So that's four so far. We're going to not count that one since it's a scripture quote. We don't mess with scripture. We leave scripture alone. Okay. Here's another one. It's five. Elsie is. And then is again. So there's six passive verbs there. Let's see what happens if you rewrite this to be more active. And by the way, I've highlighted there, so here you can see it more easily. What the passive verbs are. So let's. What happens? I could take this first sentence. Says I was introduced to Elsie Dinsmore books 11 years ago. She was my mentor, and I wanted to be like her. And this is one of my children's actual writing, and this is what they wrote. 11 years ago, I began a spiritual adventure exploring the treasure trove of timeless truths in the Elsie Dinsmore collection. Elsie became the beloved mentor that I aspired to imitate. There are zero passive verbs there. Now, just taking a look at that. Which one of those sentences is more interesting? First one or the second one? Second one. Why? What about it seems makes it seem better? It's more compelling. It has something to say, and it's like this person has some conviction about it. Let's look at another one. Her life is an example of God's invitation to walk in the good ways. Elsie is an endearing role model for the young lady who seeks to follow God. Her life is a pattern for girls. Love generations. I'm sorry, passive voice just gets to me. Let's watch it rewritten. Elsie's exemplary life recalls, isn't that better? God's invitation to the good way in Jeremiah 6:16. Then they have a scripture quote. Elsie serves as an endearing role model for the Christian young lady who seeks to follow God's ways. Doesn't that sound more professional to you? Stronger, more assertive, has some conviction about it. It's not boring, and it just comes across a lot better. Elsie taught me that God has placed certain people and circumstances in my life to conform me to the image of Christ. So true joy does not stem from appearances or circumstances, but from the inward development of character. Throughout her life, Elsie exhibited patience, gentleness, and meekness while undergoing many trials. So that's more of Melody's writing. And you can see she doesn't use any passive verbs there. Okay? When you use active voice, it makes your ideas come across as stronger. And it makes it more persuasive. It makes you more believable. If you're writing to persuade, don't use the passive voice. Use active voice. It maintains reader interest. It causes you to come across as being more intelligent. And it'll set you apart from the pack. And by the way, that's what you want to do, especially if you're going to college. You want to be set apart from the other 120 numbskulls who never learned to write. Okay, so that's what you want. Now, another thing about being concise is you need to know what your argument or your thesis is, what you're trying to say. Now, probably one of the most difficult forms of writing for people going into college is what they call the essay. Very often you go in for a test, and one of the questions on the test, it says write an essay of 500 words or less on this topic. And you're supposed to spout off everything you know about the topic. Well, I can tell you from having written these papers and from having read these papers that most of the time, They'll try to put two or three facts and then a whole lot of fluff and flowery language so it looks like they got 500, but they can only remember three things about the topic. Well, you're a whole lot better off if you write shorter paragraphs but actually have something worth saying. And if you write in active voice what you can remember, but you keep it active, keep it positive, you probably get more credit than the person who actually wrote 500 words. So one thing to do is when you're writing, figure out what's my argument, what am I trying to prove, what's the central thought. The term you'll hear English teachers use is what's the thesis for this paper, what's the main thing you're trying to say. Everything needs to match that thesis. Now, an interesting thing that I did when I was in school is you have to write a term paper, and you had to submit an outline for the term paper. I did it backwards. I would write the term paper, then once I figured out what it was I said, I'd go back and create an outline for it. I've discovered as I've gotten older that things work much better if you actually write an outline first and then write the paper. So if you're ever on a timed test somewhere and it's an essay test, maybe you're taking an SAT exam or something like that, they allow you maybe one or two pieces of scratch paper out to the side. If you have to write an essay, take 30 seconds and write the things that you know and arrange them in order and then write the essay based on the outline. That 30 seconds you took to write the outline will be well worth your time when it comes to the score. Now, what I want to suggest to you is that when you write a paper, last time I told you to write your autobiography. Okay, so an autobiography is a paper about yourself, or a computer's paper about itself. Okay, so I can't wait to read that. But an autobiography is you want to look and see, is there anything in that autobiography that really didn't have anything to do with the story? Did I somehow chase a rabbit down and tell about something that me and my mom and dad were doing at the time, but it doesn't really have anything to do with my early life? Or did it, you know, or if you're writing a paper on the Civil War, do you accidentally get off and chase a rabbit about something else that happened that's not germane to the story? So make sure that everything you put in the document matches what the purpose of the document is supposed to be, and get rid of distracting or unnecessary thoughts. Now here, this is painful, because when I write something, I think it's all good. I want to keep it all. But what turns a good paper into a great paper is that when a writer looks at his good writing and cuts stuff out to get down to the nitty-gritty, that's what makes a great paper. Your great papers are often judged more by what you leave out than by what you put in. Okay? So here's some homework. What I want you to do, and I'll send out an email tomorrow, the link to this on the internet, but I want you to take whatever you've written. If you didn't write your homework this last week, if you did write it and you want me to look at it, just email it to me. I'd prefer to have an email, although you can give me a handwritten copy or a printed copy. But I will look at your papers. But I want you to go back through. I want you to find every form of to be. So that's am, are, was, were, being, been. I want you to circle it. I want you to rewrite the paper and get rid of every one of those words. I want you to look for the words very or quite and eliminate them totally from your paper. I want you to try to get rid of any other intensifier words like we showed you. So the other things like basically, any double words like first and foremost. In other words, use the notes from this lesson, which you can print at home, and rewrite it to make your writing more concise. Then I want you to take your original paper and the new revised paper and let somebody read both of them and then give you a reaction as to which one they think is best, most. Just say, if I was going to submit this to a homeschool newsletter, which one of these two would you submit? And then when they tell you, ask why. If you've done things correctly, you've gotten rid of passive verbs, you've used active verbs, you get rid of the intensifiers, you get rid of very quiet, basically, you know, other things that don't really matter, I think you'll find that any intelligent person will always prefer a concise paper to a non-concise one. And particularly if you are trying to get published, when you go to a publisher, and I've published a few books now, one of the things they're concerned about is the length of the writing. So when I was writing Sunday School Lessons for our denomination, there was a certain length I could have for each one. And I would write it, and invariably there would be another thought I had to share and didn't have enough room. But if I went back and tweaked my writing to be more concise, get rid of the stuff, I always had room for another thought so I could pack more thoughts into the same amount of space. What you want is when a college professor is reading your paper or when someone is reading your newspaper article that you're using to influence the world for Christ, somebody is reading a blog article that you put on the internet, you don't want them to get bored. You want them to be engaged from the very first sentence, and they can't put it down, and they read everything you have to say, and when they get through, you want them to say, wow, that person really had something to say. And that is our mission as Christians. Our mission as Christians is that we have a world clamoring for answers. We have the answers, but they need to know that we know how to say it, and we need to know how to express it, and we need to know how to communicate and get our point across. So there's kind of your homework. One other thing I'll encourage you to do is here is a link, and I'll send this out in email. This was an essay written in 2005. I don't know if this computer will let me do this or not. This is a an article Richard wrote in 2005. How old would Richard have been in 2005? 16. You know, he'd been 16 years old at the time. This was a G.A. Henty essay contest, and he did get third place in this contest. And I, you know, my unbiased opinion, of course, is I think he actually did better. I clicked on the link, but I think that, John, can you see if there's an internet browser that's open and drag it onto this window? And just see if it's over. If you can, drag it in here from the other screen. It may be on the, you're on the left screen. You have to go over to the right. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. All right. So if you would, just hit Control Plus one time. Just hold down your Control key and hit Plus, and that browser window will blow it up just a little bit. Okay, so let me just read you a few sentences of this. I want you to see how many passive verbs you hear. Secular humanists and feminists have launched an attack at the foundations of the family. They seek to eliminate any distinctions in the God-ordained roles for men and women. Many men degrade women, failing to honor them as precious, weaker vessels. To build strong families, parents must teach and reinforce the foundational principles of God's design for the genders. G.A. Henty's writings depict with clarity the divine distinction in roles for men and women. There's not a single passive verb in that entire first paragraph. Okay, let's read one more. Henty's main female characters exemplify proper femininity in their roles as homemakers and ladies of integrity and courage. The men in his stories function as protectors, self-sacrificial providers, heroes of sterling character. Henty's literary legacy encourages boys to deeds of valor and girls to ladylike grace. Still, not a single passive verb. If you read through this essay, I haven't read this entire thing in quite a long time. My guess is that you won't find more than one or two passive verbs in the whole thing. Now, Richard didn't write it this way to begin with. He wrote a first draft that he went through, and he circled every is, are, was, were, being, been. He went back through and he eliminated them all because I had already taught him this process. Well, because of that, he was able to win a prize from Vision Forum's G.A. Henty essay contest. And the point is it is this one thing. So of all the things I've told you so far about writing, getting rid of passive voice is by far the number one trick that will make your writing stand out from everyone else's. Because it makes you come across as authoritative, assertive, having something to say, meaning what you say, and having conviction. And when people get through reading something that has no passive voice, they'll look, say, wow. That really is different writing. And they will recognize instantly that you are a gifted writer just for that one thing. So there's other things you can do here, especially get rid of those intensifier words. They add nothing to your meaning. They're just wasting space, and I'm just insulted when I have to read them. Okay, so, but this is a great thing. Getting rid of passive voice more than anything else will make you look much better than anyone else that is contributing the same kind of material. All right, any questions about being concise? Think of it in terms of word economy. How can I say more thoughts with fewer words? And that's something, obviously, anybody that preaches hour-and-a-half-long sermons probably doesn't know a lot about word economy, but I'm trying to get my point across anyway. All right. Any questions? All right. By the way, you can talk for an hour and a half if you have something worth saying. You know, but the key is the same thing with reading. You have to have something worth reading for them to get all the way to the end. And that's the big difference. All right. Well, let's dismiss with a word of prayer. And you've got your homework. I will post a recording online when I get home this afternoon and have that up. So by tomorrow, you should be able to print out the notes at the house, print out the homework assignment. You can go read this article. And that, yes, that is kind of a funny looking picture of Richard from a long, long time ago. But anyway, I think that'll be a good example for you to look at, just because, I think there's some good examples in there of how not to use it. And it's actually fun. You start playing a game after a while. You write a sentence and say, oh, wait a minute, there's a passive verb. How can I change it? You learn to use verbs that mean something, and it adds a lot to your writing. And I find myself constantly when I'm reading someone else's writing saying, how could they have reworded that sentence to use active? And I can make sentences that always sound better. So, all right, let's pray. Father, thank you for young people who want to write well, and I pray that they'll use those skills to glorify you, whether it's just them doing their work above what worldly young people do so that they can give a good testimony that Christian young people or homeschool Christian young people can deliver a superior quality of work by following your ways. Lord, Jesus himself talked about the need to be concise when he said that we must give account of every idle word. God, forgive us for the idle words, not only that creep into our conversations, but creep into our writing and make us less effective for your kingdom than we ought to be. Lord, help us to be concise because we are to redeem the time, for the days are evil. We have a lot to say and so little time in which to say it. God, help us to focus on being concise and being clear, particularly as we communicate the message of gospel to a lost and dying world. We love you. Thank you for this day. Help us to honor and glorify you throughout our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, thank you. John, you can go ahead and stop the recording behind it. Yeah, just click out there.